The moral condition of America, as with any nation in any age, is a reflection of the spiritual condition of the church inside that society.
There are demons, and they have the power to blind your mind towards spiritual things.
In the name of Jesus, you get back up there where you belong.
They got together and swore a pact to the devil.
I can't be a big blessing to people if I'm poor and broke.
I have sinned against you, my Lord.
And we're so thankful that God has forgiven us.
Welcome back to Short of the Glory with Ellen and Maddie.
Hi, how's everybody doing?
How's everyone's mental health?
Just quick check-in. Just lay your hearts out. We'll wait.
Hold space. We'll hold space for you.
We're holding space. This is our final episode of season three. I'm impressed with us. Three seasons of this nonsense is pretty impressive.
Three seasons without any promotion and very little time.
Yeah.
Doing anything
except in the off season. Ourselves.
Yeah, maybe that'll be a goal for 2025 or whenever we start the next season. Yeah. But in the off time, if you enjoyed listening or you have enjoyed listening, we would love it if you rated, reviewed, subscribed, etc. Told your mom, your friends, your grandma.
I would love if grandmas listened to this.
Yeah. They've had a journey. I'm sure they're tired. I'm sure they're like, I want to know that the kids are all right. Not that we're kids anymore, but.
And I don't know if we're all right. You know what? No, we complain too much. I think you and I got pretty good things going, all things considered.
Very true. Very true. My back doesn't hurt ever. So that's a win for someone in her 30s.
Your back never hurts?
Not really.
Wow. Okay. Brag. Yeah.
Humble brag. Do you have any things that you want to brag about before we start?
Gosh, no. Not really.
Oh, so now I just look like the one with the inflated ego. Cool.
I started working out again in the morning, so I guess that's my brag.
Hey, morning workout. That's huge.
Yeah.
Having motivation early in the morning? Not me.
I'm a little early bird. What can I say? I'm up at 5 a.m. almost every morning.
You and the gym bros. By choice.
I work out in my kitchen now, so it's just like me and the cats.
Love it.
Yeah.
Wait, cute. You work out in your kitchen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I have a lot of follow-up questions, but that could take 45 minutes.
Well, I chose the kitchen because we live in an apartment and we have neighbors below us. And that seems to be the furthest away from where their bedroom would be. And so if I'm making squeaky noise, that seems like a good place to be. So
a considerate queen.
Hey, yeah, somebody's got to. I mean, I kind of bang around furniture to set this thing up, so I'm not fully considerate.
It's not sleeping hours. It's fine.
No, I know. I'm like, during the daytime, I think people kind of they're allowed to make whatever noise they want to.
I remember in the past, I don't know if it's your current apartment, but one of your neighbors, we could hear them like power walking in their apartment.
Yes. Yes.
Was it this one?
No, these are new neighbors downstairs now.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The garden unit itself is fine, but it's like the people that live below us, we can see into their apartments when we walk in, and it's just like garbage is everywhere. And I'm like, do you guys not care about where you live? And then people before that were like that too. Just like garbage, like boxes and stuff. And I'm like, come on.
Is it just boxes? Are they like millennials who are like, this is a good quality box, I don't want to throw it out?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Anyway.
Okay. Been there.
Yeah, that's a.
But it's not littering my house.
Right. Yeah. And it just like, it doesn't look cute and cozy in there. I'm a big believer in curating spaces to be comfortable and nice. And it's not frivolous to spend money on that stuff. On a nice little rug.
Yeah. Nesting.
Yeah. Speaking of nesting.
Yeah. So Maddie proposed today's episode. This is, as you said, the last episode of season three. We don't know when season four will kick off, so follow our socials for that. Social. There's only one.
Just the one.
But today's a little departure from the last couple of episodes and tough stuff we've talked about this season. So why don't you kick it off, Maddie?
Yeah. Okay. I had I don't really know what inspired this idea, but it's also very reminiscent of many murder mystery, murder true crime.
Just murder. There's no mystery.
Sometimes there's a mystery, but like true crime podcasts will often have this format. So in my travels of researching for this podcast, travels vis-a-vis the internet and listening to other podcasts, I've like come across the documentary Marjo. Like people have mentioned it several different times. And so I rented it from my local library and watched it. And the documentary really inspired this episode. And I was fearful that talking about this one person would maybe not have enough like juice for one epi. And so I propose that I talk about Marjo and Ellen talk about another youngster, because today's theme is child preachers, which I was a little nervous about because I'm like, are we going to be dunking on kids? I know we say
these are grown adults now.
Well, now they are, yes. But I am like, we are equal opportunity dunkers. And today that may include children, though I feel like I won't be doing a lot of like dunking for my human.
I won't be dunking so much for my person, partly because I did a little digging on his parents and his father in particular. And I feel like that's where the problem starts. So
yeah, today's episode is about dunking on parents. So
which we have never done in an episode before.
Never done in an episode and never have done in my personal life.
LOL.
Okay. So I'm going to start with my little fella. The other twist of today's episode is Ellen and I did not look into each other's person. Not really.
I know nothing. Yeah.
So I kind of get to like tell Ellen about it and she just gets to sit back and listen and then we get to switch. So I am talking about Marjo, which was inspired by the 1972 documentary, also titled Marjo. So Marjo was a child preacher during the 1950s. So like way back when. The documentary came out in like the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like who have we talked about? Who was like the main person back in the day? Is this when it was radio preachers and like early Billy Graham?
Yeah. You know what? Actually, I say the 1950s and honestly, because Marjo was a child, it was more like the 40s. So he was a little like pre-Billy Graham. I suppose during this time would be like Billy Sunday, who was a big inspiration for Billy Graham. But yeah, it was kind of before the mainstream like folks that we've talked about before. I guess more like Sister Amy times, honestly.
Yep.
Yeah. Marjo was born January 14th, 1944. To parents Vernon and Marge. Vernon and Marge were themselves evangelists. Vernon worked for a church for many, many years. His dad and his grandparents before him were also preachers. And so he was running a church for a while. He was actually married to another woman and had children with her when suddenly some hot new slice came to town from Canada.
Oh, shit. Wait, is he – sorry. Did you say where he was born, where he's from?
Marjo was born in California, but his dad, Vernon, was, I think – living somewhere out on the East Coast. And so he was running his church. And at the time, evangelists were kind of like becoming a new hot and cool thing. And so he invited some popular evangelists to his church. I think they were from Canada. They were called like the Canadian Sisters. Really wanted to investigate that more, but didn't fall down that rabbit hole because I knew I'd have limited time.
Because this would be a two-part episode.
Yeah. And so he met Marge. Marge was one of the evangelists as part of this like traveling group. And the sources that I have encountered that talk about Marge are like from the 70s primarily. Both the documentary and then a book entitled Marjo by Stephen Gaines go into detail about Marge. And so like, I hate to use the 70s interpretation of women and mothers because I'm sure there is some amount of sexism in there. But also Marge was like not a good mom based on what Marjo has talked about. And so a lot of her energy in Marjo is kind of based around her wanting to be an evangelist, be kind of front and center. She like loved doing this work. But when she met Vernon and fell in love after 2 weeks, the pair decided to get married. Vernon left his wife, had to leave his church, and they moved out to California to start a new life together. Or I think actually they moved to Las Vegas first and then to California.
As one does.
Yeah. So Vernon was removed from his place in like the church. I think he was more like a Pentecostal type. I can't remember exactly. It was kind of interesting. There was a lot of talk about like old time faith as like capital letters, like proper noun. And I was trying to figure out like, what is this old time faith? Like very quickly, not really sure. But anyway, Vernon and Marge are together. Vernon gets divorced from his wife, who does demand a quite high alimony. Vernon then is like trying to figure out what he's going to do and starts selling stuff. And like gets to be a pretty good salesman to the point where he like opens up his own like little store. And Marge, on the other hand, was really like not jiving with this life. I think she missed like the glory days of getting to like be on stage and kind of have that attention around her. And then she eventually got pregnant. And that is when she had Marjo.
Mm-hmm. Origins of Marjo's name.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
So, Marge.
That was a question. Yes. Not a statement. I'm just, yeah.
The name Marjo is a portmanteau of Mary and Joseph. So.
I just assumed that they named him after his mom.
I kind of thought that too initially. But yeah, that is where his name comes from. And part of the reason that she chose this name is part of the lore of Marjo as a young child preacher. So she has like a fairly normal pregnancy up until she's like about to give birth. And then like Marjo just like will not come out. So she has to get a C-section, and that's when the doctors find that the umbilical cord was wrapped around Marjo's neck, which, like, is scary now, but especially, like, in the 40s when, I don't know, they gave women, like, iodine tablets and then, like, asked them to make them dinner later that day after giving birth. I don't know. Like, very dangerous. And so she, like, took this experience of Marjo kind of in a perilous situation as, like, this is a God. This is a miracle. This child is a gift from God. He's meant to live. And
because he had his umbilical cord wrapped.
Yeah. And it was a stressful, scary pregnancy.
Twins. I did the same thing.
That was you?
Yeah. Basically, Marjo.
Well, did your parents enroll you into baton twirling lessons at the age of 2?
No, but I want to hear about it.
So part of what Marge was able to like reconcile as she was pregnant was this thought, per the book that I read, this thought of, now I get to like live my dreams through my child. She was really hoping for a girl, I think, but then got Marjo. And his parents could tell that Marjo was like a pretty smart kid. He had a really good gift of like mimicry, could memorize things really well. And so they enrolled him, I guess not and so, but they did enroll him into baton twirling lessons at the age of 2. And Marge would try to get him to say like glory and hallelujah as like his first words. Like that was her goal.
Hallelujah is kind of a tough one.
Yeah, right? That's a tough one. But very cute if you think about like a little two-year-old trying to say that. So by three, he was marching in a parade and twirling the baton. The book that I read recounts a story of at the end of the parade, I think Marge like saw on the back of Marjo's pants like a bunch of footprints, which was really confusing. And it was because apparently the drum major or whoever was in charge of the parade had to like keep kicking his butt to keep him moving because he got too tired, even though he had a very special made custom baton to twirl. Because he's three.
I was gonna say, because he's a tiny child.
He's a child. He should be taking a nap, probably.
Yeah.
So his parents are pretty familiar with the evangelizing world of setting up revivals and tent meetings and all that. And so his parents decide to organize a revival. And I think really this is to introduce this idea of Marjo as a little tiny preacher. And so first Vernon does a sermon. And then Marjo goes up and performs a 6-minute sermon.
Is he baton twirling during it?
I don't know. That'd be cute. They also
like,
taught
what's the pipeline between like baton twirling and then becoming a preacher?
I think they just like wanted a showman. They also taught him to play a bunch of instruments. They also bleached his hair blonde. Like, again, this is the 1940s, so you're just, like, forcing a little tiny child to dye their hair.
My mouth is open,
yeah,
dear listener. I just...
It's, like, toddlers and tiaras, like, on crack cocaine plus God.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marjo performs this 6-minute sermon, but it wasn't necessarily, like, picking up the traction that they really needed to until... Lewis Wolfe, who was a writer for the Chicago Tribune, read about Marjo in a local newspaper. And after he read about Marjo, he met his parents and wanted to help like promote this idea of a little preacher. And so he drove around California with like photos of Marjo and like press releases. And then I don't know if it was his idea or Marjo's parents' idea, but this idea came up for Marjo to perform a marriage ceremony.
At what age was he at this point?
I think he's like 3, almost 4. He performs the ceremony when he is 4 years old. Isn't that crazy? I can't.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at ages of children. But I'm like, 4 is so small.
Well, like the vocabulary alone.
It's not there.
Yeah.
Also, what does a four-year-old have to say about marriage?
Yeah. I'm sorry. This is insane. Go on.
Right. And so, what happens is like Marjo is interviewed by this woman who feels like after Marjo has memorized a script essentially that his mom has given him that he can be ordained. And so she ordains him and then they find this couple who I think are in California because the man is on a naval base and I guess like his girlfriend is there to like be with him. And so they like read through California law, through ordination law, and like there's no minimum age for like a person who can like perform a marriage. And so they have like Marjo perform this like marriage ceremony to this naval couple. People hated it. Like preachers around the country were so mad. They're like, this is a mockery of our faith. This is not legitimate. The woman who like hosted the ceremony, she had like a small like chapel, I think, near the naval base, was like pissed because she's like, this seems like it's like a gimmicky Las Vegas type place.
Mm.
So people really hated it. But Marjo did qualify for Ripley's Believe It or Not, or no, maybe the Guinness World Record of like youngest preacher to like marry somebody. Yeah.
I don't even know what to say to that. Wait, so is this journalist from Chicago the one reporting these stories?
I guess so. I think he's the one okay. who's like trying to like help these parents make it a thing. That's kind of what it that's the impression I was getting.
Okay.
And so after this stint or stunt or whatever, his family like took the show on the road and spent the next 9 years of his life like traveling and letting like little Marjo preach at tent revivals. And he did like healings, he sold little religious relics, and he did a lot of like fire and brimstone type preaching. So it's like the type of preaching that's like, repent now or go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a little clip of little Marjo preaching that I'm going to play.
Yay. I'm excited to hear it in this child voice.
It is like, it's cute. He's a cute kid. And you kind of like get why people were like, oh, this is like a fun little thing to go see. Like,
this is silly.
Yeah.
It's like super traumatizing to this child.
Right, exactly. This clip is kind of funny because there's like some music at the beginning, but please hold.
If I were to choose my own subject, I would have brought you a message on the love of God put on heaven. But the Lord laid on my heart to bring you a message on hell. I say hell is a place of extreme bodily suffering. Down on this earth, we do everything we can to escape suffering. We take aspirin. We go to the hospital. We might have an operation.
The R's in that little clip are crazy.
Man, the practice that must have taken.
Part of kind of the tragedy and the dunking of all this is like Marjo's mom was like pretty abusive in the process of getting him to memorize these clips. She would do things like suffocate him under a pillow or like pretend to drown him if he wasn't like memorizing things well enough or staying focused. Yeah, it was
Did they not good. Only have Marjo, only one child?
They eventually had two more. Marjo, I don't know how long after, I think when Marjo was like three, he had a little brother whose name was Verno, I think. I don't know. And then he also had a little sister whose name was like Starlo or something. Like very silly, weird names, respectfully.
Mm-hmm. respectfully.
I don't know. There's a couple little comments, like very unique names. And the money was really good for Marjo and his family for a while. When Marjo is an adult, he assumes that he made somewhere around like $3 million during all of his time of preaching. But eventually the gimmick of it all wears off. You know, kids grow up and get a little less cute. They become sullen teenagers. And eventually Marjo's father runs off with a bunch of the money, kind of abandoning the family, essentially. I think he meets another woman and marries her instead of later in life.
So here's a question I have. His father was already a preacher. Mm-hmm. His father's kind of like the opening act to his three-year-old son, who's being coached by his wife. Did he not have any part in shaping Marjo into this like child pastor that he was? Was it mostly just his mom?
Most of the narrative I get is like she had a real hands-on role with like teaching him how to do stuff. But I have to assume, to a certain extent, Vernon had like some role, at least maybe in the theology. But there was another comment I read that like Vernon just like kind of didn't have the magic sauce of like he
sounds about right.
Yeah, he wasn't like an enthralling like speaker. But Marjo was really good. Like he was really good at like kind of hearing the cadence of what you're supposed to do, and he could just do it. So after Marjo's dad runs away with all of the money, Marjo's mom is like kind of trying to figure it out. I think she works at like a restaurant for a while with the three kids. And eventually Marjo runs away from his mom. At I think around the age of 16. Also in this book, and it wasn't mentioned anywhere else, which I thought was kind of interesting, was that Marjo, I think, at 16, met a girl, got her pregnant, and then the two of them got married for a little while. They, like, went off to, like, Reno and then got married quietly and then spent some time together. And then I think after some amount of time, you know, he's, like, kind of trying to be a grown up and take care of like his family. He like loses touch with his mom and then like leaves that situation, kind of just like not feeling equipped to handle it, which I guess is valid. You know, he's 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, he leaves and just lives in a series of homes. It's a real like lost period. It's been described as like a beatnik or like a hippie. He's just like kind of trying to get by, tries his hand at acting. And this is kind of when the documentary Marjo steps in to Marjo's life. It gets to a certain point where Marjo really isn't able to make it as like an actor or a singer. And so he steps back into the evangelizing world, in order to make some money while he's preaching. And so he goes back and forth between these two worlds of like kind of the 60s, you know, early 70s chill lifestyle. And then when he runs out of money, he goes back to preaching at tent revivals because the money is so good. And so the documentary is interesting because it does talk about like some amount of his childhood, but spends most of his time like filming him at different like tent revivals, but also at churches, and then like cutting to hit just like talking to him in like the bedroom as he's like, this is all like a bunch of bullshit. Like, this is a performance I do. I don't believe in any of it. I never believed in any of it. And like, I think there can be really great things about church, but I think I'm taking advantage of people.
Right.
So it's really interesting. The documentary is pretty long. It's definitely like a 1970s documentary where it's, mm-hmm. I don't know, I feel like we really have like a Netflixification of our documentaries.
More editing.
Yeah, more editing, more yeah. Supercuts. But yeah, it's really well made. And so after the documentary, Marjo continues to pursue acting. He appears in a number of TV shows, primarily as like a background character. He is in the movie Wild Bill and plays a preacher in that movie. And Marjo is still alive today. He works as an auctioneer up until like 2019 for like fundraising events. Yeah. Yeah. he seems like a cool guy. Like, apart from probably, I mean, it's easy to paint people in like a positive light, you know, when you don't know anything about them and you just like see a documentary of like the cool, chill parts of their life. But mm-hmm. As far as like people we've talked about on this show, like Marjo seems like the most genuine human, like just like an actual person who kind of went through something shitty.
Yeah. It also seems like when they talk to him later on in his life, when he goes back to preaching at these tent revivals, like, let me back up my thought. So, given how traumatic his childhood was with the abuse of his mother, and I'm sure, like, being put on stage at a young age and having all that pressure on you, like, he really, I mean, all things aside, like, I'm thinking true crime podcasts, like, the harm that he's done, he's aware of, and right. He will speak about it, but it's not nearly as bad as some other people who have endured similar things, mm-hmm. who like go on to cause great harm to people.
Right. And he puts on a good show. I mean,
yeah, he's acting people, like he's doing what he loves.
Yeah. One thing I thought was funny they talked about was he would incorporate like moves he saw like Mick Jagger do into some of his like preaching. And Yeah, I mean, he's good at it. Like, he's got the gift.
So I should look up videos of this.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So, that was really fun.
Yeah.
Is there more?
No, that's pretty much it. Philadelphia Live Arts Festival commissioned a writer and actor to make a one-man play about Marjo, which I'd be very interested to see. Also, I think he later changed his name to Hugh, because when you look him up on Wikipedia, it's Hugh Marjo Ross Gortner, which I think is interesting.
Huh.
He had to shake the Marjo name.
Well, yeah. I mean, for them to be like, it's Mary and Joseph combined, it's like, no, you're basically just named after your mom.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But thank you. Thank you for sharing this fun story.
Yeah, of course. I'm excited to hear your story.
Yeah. So the person I'm going to talk about is Duffy Strode. And what do you know about him?
Absolutely nothing. Okay. He's from the 90s, right?
80s.
Okay.
So I'm talking about another child preacher. This one is more current, but not like not that current. 80s, late 80s. But Ryan Duffy Strode was born May 25th, 1977. He was a former street preacher who became the subject of nationwide controversy in the 80s for his style of preaching at the age of 10. His parents were David and Robin Strode, and they raised Duffy and his two siblings in North Carolina. His younger sister's name was Pepper, and his brother was Matthew, and they also did this same style of street preaching. Mm. His father, David, had been arrested several times for his own street preaching, and across many of the articles that I read about this, a lot talk about how his parents and their rhetoric showed that they were racist and homophobic, anti-Catholic in their beliefs.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about the anti-Catholic thing before, like not super surprising if they're strong evangelical or like especially at this level. The family had to relocate to Marion, North Carolina from Chambersburg, Pennsylvania after his dad, David, was arrested 5 times for street preaching.
Dang. Just like you can be arrested just by like standing on the street talking.
I'll get into it more. It's more about like what they were saying and yelling at people. Yeah. And yes, I do mean yelling. So a little bit of backstory about his parents. I found this in an Orlando Sentinel article titled Duffy Strode Behind the Bible Thumping. And they go on to say that his father, David, grew up an abused child where his father beat his mother. David grew up angry, spent time in a reform school, got drunk a lot, and met Robin in a bar. They were married in 1976, so Duffy was born a year after that. At the time, David was 27, and Robin was 16.
Eek. Oof. Yeah.
And she was pregnant with Duffy when they were married. They met in a bar, but she's 16. So I have a little questions around that. I know the legal drinking age dropped to 18 at one point, but...
Well, in some states, I think it's in Wisconsin, if your parents...
If you're with your parents.
Are at the bar, it's like 15. I swear to God.
Well, it doesn't say that she was with her parents. But regardless, he was 27, she was 16. That's still problematic.
Yeah. A minor is a minor, whether they can drink or not.
Yeah. For the next 5 years after they got married, David Strode, his dad, lived as though his wife and his son made little difference in his life. He stayed out all night on weekends, drank heavily, and cheated on his wife.
Oof.
So.
What a great... And this is the man who stood on a street yelling at people?
It's very rich.
Yeah.
But that didn't start until later. So at 11:25 p.m. on January 18th, 1981... David Strode flicked on the television and saw evangelist Jack Van Impe?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's where he heard the gospel for the first time, he claims. And then 3 days later, he bought a King James Bible, which he read for 4 and 5 hours a day. So I'm not sure if he was working at the time. I know that's been thing that's been talked about across these articles. Like, he trained as a machinist and then he would lose his job, or he was a pastor, or maybe not a pastor, but he like would be at a church and then get kicked out. Like, he had a hard time holding things down.
He sounds mentally not well.
I mean, you are almost a therapist, so I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
If it's coming from you, I trust it.
Also, I guess, like, does it take a rocket scientist or a therapist to hear somebody who was abused as a child would be mentally unwell?
No.
So.
And it doesn't sound like he did anything about it. He just
drank a lot.
Like, yeah. And then was like, ooh, I'm going to fill this addiction with a different one. So when he told Robin that he had been saved, she was really happy about it, but didn't think he would change much. But the deeper that David explored his new faith, the stranger Robin found him. And the breaking point came in the spring of 1985.
What happened in 1985?
He made a church out of their living room. Like, set up a church in their living room.
Did he bring in pews?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me more.
So she stayed away for 15 months, living with another man much of the time. Didn't really get more information about that.
Good for her.
But because she was away for those 15 months, I think that led David to reflect on that. And it was, as they say, a turning point for him. And so he says, when she left, I said, I'm going to preach in the streets. Because after about 4 months after she was gone, I didn't care if I lived or died.
Ugh, man. It's giving mania for me. That's my professional therapy opinion.
And we haven't even gotten to the main subject of this story.
Oh, no. Yeah, right? This is just the dad. This is the groundwork.
Yeah. So, he would, like, go to, I want to say, like, Walmart or other, like, shopping, that kind of shopping store, and, like, park his pickup in the parking lot and then just, like, yell a short sermon on hell in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Which people love to hear when they're just trying to go about their
day. Trying to get some old groceries.
Yeah. So he composed a short sermon on hell, was delivering it to a group of teenagers while his brother and a friend handed out leaflets. But it wasn't until he unleashed his evangelical fury on a crowd waiting outside a movie theater that he realized the power he possessed to enrage people.
He's a professional pisser-offer.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Westboro Baptist Church. Yeah. Like, they just loved pissing people off. So that, like, fight outside of the movie theater, he said, that's the first time I ever saw anybody get mad. They turned and called me every name they could think of. And after that is when it started. I just started getting bolder and bolder. Instead of being like, maybe I should reflect, he's like, I'm going to double down.
It's fueling my fire.
Yeah. So this was when they were still in Pennsylvania. And that movie theater incident, maybe this was later, but Strode was charged and found guilty of disturbing the peace and sentenced to 6 months in prison and a $350 fine. However, he was aided by the Rutherford Institute of Manassas, an organization that works for free religious speech, and they fought it in court. The charges against him were eventually dropped. And a few weeks later, his wife called and said she wanted to come home. So this is while Robin is out. Strode said he felt like he was on the verge of starting a new life, and it seemed that the Lord had found a new mission for him in the southwestern corner of North Carolina. One of the claims is that one of his, like, favorite evangelists was there, and that's why he went there.
Sure.
Yeah. So, back to the main topic. David and Robin had those three kids, Duffy and his two siblings, Pepper and Matthew. And Duffy is the one that gained the national attention.
Wait, maybe you said this already. Is Duffy his legal name?
Ryan Duffy.
Ryan Duffy, okay. Yes.
Strode. But he does go by Duffy in, like, all the things.
Okay, that's fine. I just was like, did his parents really go Duffy, Pepper, and Matthew?
I don't know, Duffy is a middle name, if that's any better.
Duffy Duck. Sometimes I have, never mind.
I mean, Pepper's kind of fun.
Pepper's cute.
I wouldn't name a human, but like, it's kind of cute.
Yeah.
And then the things that she was saying outside of her elementary school, you're like, good Less Lord. Cute. So about that, they would preach outside of their elementary school, Duffy and his two siblings, and school officials said the preaching, which included warnings about whoremongers and fornicators, disrupted school, and the children, like their father, shouted their words. So as like little Timmy is getting off the bus, walking to first grade, there's these three kids just yelling like, if you wear makeup, you're a whore. You know?
And wait, okay, all those two siblings are younger than Duffy?
Yes, Duffy is the oldest.
Damn.
So he was like 10 or 11 and Pepper would have been 6.
It's like at that point, kids truly do not even know what they're saying and you can't tell me otherwise.
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that because that is a big piece of this story. Mm-hmm. So David Strode, when reporters would ask him about why his children were preaching outside of their elementary school, he said it was necessitated by racial integration, the teaching of evolution and sex education in public schools. Due to this preaching that Duffy and his two siblings would do outside of their school, they were suspended 5 times during the 1987 to 1988 school year. And in May of 1988, 500 residents of Marion, which is the small North Carolina town that they were living in, 500 residents signed a petition asking that the family obey school rules or move out of town.
Damn. In South in a Carolina, they're asking you to clam it.
In the actually, if you watch old video footage of these interviews, people are very articulate about what frustrates them, and they come from a place of curiosity. Hmm. And one example of that, so as I mentioned, Duffy got national attention for this preaching, screeching, if you will. And one of the television shows he appeared on with his dad, David, was Oprah.
Yes.
And in this notorious Oprah interview, which you can still see on YouTube, the clip begins with a young black woman who stands up and states, I see it here. Like, it seems like these kids are just regurgitating Bible verses, and I want to know if you really understand what it is that you are preaching. Mm-hmm. Could you maybe give me a Bible verse and interpret it or something? Or could you preach for us and tell us what it is you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, very respectful.
Yeah,
like,
very.
Hey, you just shouted at us, but like, I'm just wondering if you could explain what it was that you were shouting.
Right, say more.
In your own words.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So then Oprah asks Duffy if he wants to preach, and then the audience, like, and then tell the audience what he means by what he's saying. And his dad keeps interrupting to, like, mansplain what it is that Duffy is saying or, like, the verses. And, like, finally Duffy goes to the head of the stage to preach at the audience, and I'm going to play the clip for you.
Woohoo!
Please hold.
It's really just like monotone, like volume all the way up, caps locks on.
Not enough enunciation for me. I don't know if it's like the accent, but I couldn't tell you what he's saying.
I love to like a little like bit that's like, thou shalt in thy, like just a string of like Bible-y sounding words.
Well, you know, his dad really fell in love with that King James Bible. Yeah, was reading so it true. 4 to 5 hours a day.
So true.
Yeah. So then after he does that screaming preaching, Oprah asks him to tell the audience in his own words what he just said means. And he says, why I'm screaming is the Bible definition of preaching is Isaiah 58:1. It says, cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet.
Sure. Yeah.
But then his dad interjects and says, the Bible says you're to speak as the oracles of God. If you don't want to talk the way this Bible talks, you should keep your mouth shut.
Hey.
Yeah.
He's saying that to a woman that was named after a person in the Bible.
To Oprah?
Yeah.
Who is Oprah in the Bible?
Well, I think her name is supposed to be Orpah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oprah's name is supposed to be Orpah.
I think that's like the reference that they were making.
Man.
When her dad named her.
Huh. The more you know. Mm-hmm. Chicago's own.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you can see the clip. You can see Duffy doing his performance at the age of 10. His dad being an absolute prick. Oprah being very patient, and the audience, quite frankly, being like, we're just trying to come from a place of curiosity. Like, imagine if I've never read the Bible. This is what one woman in the audience says. Like, how would you explain what you've just said to me in, right, like, layman's terms? So when Oprah asked Duffy, again, after he does the preaching, to put what he said in his own words, he responds with, I know what it means, but it's just hard to understand. But you've got to realize that the prophets were out there saying, thus saith the Lord, and they didn't even know who it was. They didn't understand what they were saying.
Oh, sweetie, no.
Sweet baby. Well.
Wrong.
Yeah. After this Oprah interview and months of media attention and many school suspensions, Duffy's parents decided to homeschool their kids with a Bible-based education program.
Thank God for that.
Mm-hmm. After homeschooling began, the media frenzy ended, probably because they weren't outside of their elementary school gaining attention. And in a Greensboro News and Record article from 1998, so 10 years later, they interviewed the family, and they go on to say, like, as their homeschool kids grew older, worldly influences crept in and Duffy became estranged from them. Duffy turned 16, pivotal age, and got a job making hamburgers at the local Wendy's. He started wearing one of those gold chains and his baseball cap backwards.
Not a gold chain.
Yeah.
Scary.
I know. He, like, started listening to rock and roll music. And he ended up dating a girl named Kim Ellington, a pretty shy 19-year-old who grew up going to one of the mega churches that threw the Strodes out 10 years prior.
Mm.
Duffy left home to live with a punk rocker friend, as his dad described him, and the family didn't talk to him for 10 months.
Wow.
In November of that same year, at the community center where the Strode family once faced hundreds of angry townspeople. This was during a filming of the Sally Jesse Raphael show. This was during the media hype of 1988. Anyway, at that same community center, Kim and Duffy got married, but none of his family attended.
Aww.
I don't know if they're still married. I can't confirm that. But he, I believe, works not at Wendy's anymore. I think he's worked in a factory, but he's keeps a pretty low profile.
Just like a normal dude.
Yeah, all things considered.
Yeah.
And there's some like follow-up articles from his sister and his brother. His sister is also not really in contact with her parents. Mm-hmm. Dumb fact, his younger brother got really into boxing and his dad, I believe, opened a boxing ring and became like his coach. So he kind of put all of his eggs in Matthew, the youngest child. And Matthew goes by Mayhem in the boxing ring.
That's a great name. Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another fact, maybe not fact, but in my research, there were allegations that David Strode may have had additional children outside of his marriage with Robin. Mm-hmm. Either before or after, but nothing was verifiable, but I think it just speaks to his character that, like,
yeah,
this man was out there preaching that women were whores if they wore makeup, that, like, racial integration is bad, all this other stuff, like, just if you don't follow the Bible verbatim, that you are going to hell, and shouted that, and then taught his children to shout that at people, and yet he committed a whole bunch of sins. So
yeah, just like generally not a good dude, and then also like going against what he is saying.
Yes. So
not shocking, but annoying.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the story of Duffy Strode.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, it's not, but you did a great job.
Oh, thank you.
My fun dumb fact I think was like kind of, I don't know if it's dumb. It's just a little factoid. The documentary Marjo was made by a boyfriend-girlfriend team.
Huh.
Howard and Sarah. I can't remember her last name. But so it won an Academy Award for Best Picture.
Okay.
Best Documentary.
In the 70s when it came out.
Yeah, 77, I think, is when it came out. 72? I don't remember. Anyway. And then, like, decades go by. And eventually, like, I can't remember exactly how this comes about. But essentially, the documentary was almost, like, lost due to, like, people not keeping, like, the film itself, like, in good condition. And so I think, like, Sarah, who helped, like, create the documentary, was able to, like, track down, like, the pieces of the documentary to preserve it. And then they put it out onto DVD in 2001.
Nice.
Which I was like, that's how I got to see it.
Yeah.
It was on DVD.
You heard about this documentary from another podcast?
Yeah, I had heard about it before this episode, but most recently I was listening to the podcast Behind the Bastards, and the host like just dropped in this documentary, like mentioning it. And so I was like, you know what? I think it's about time I check this one out.
And this is one that you had Ryan watch with you as well?
I think he started watching it with me, then he eventually gave up, just like the last documentary that we watched together.
Respect. Hey, you know what? He showed interest in your weird hobbies, and then he was like, this isn't for me. And that's good, like, self-awareness.
Gotta go play Fortnite with my friends, which I'm like, fine. I was like, please just stay here with me.
Well, if I was in Chicago, I would have watched it with you.
Hell yeah.
Oh, man.
What a year.
What a year. Yeah, I feel like this season has been our most eclectic. We've talked about Christian Zionism. We've talked about university religious groups. We've talked about online programs. So...
Miracle healings.
Yeah. We've touched on like all of the strange fringes, I would say. And there's definitely more. So just know that we've barely scratched the surface. There's always more things being added to our ever-growing list. But if you have any things that pique your interest and you want to have us do an episode on it, don't hesitate to slide into our DMs at SOTGpod on Instagram.
Yeah, I'm not great about checking the DMs, but I'm trying to be better at it. So I love seeing anytime we get one. It makes my day. I'm just a normal little guy.
You're working so hard.
I'm working so hard.
Yeah. Anything else that you want to share with the listeners or what you're looking forward to in the coming months off?
Just like the general good vibes of the summer. I think I got a nice few things lined up coming up. And so I'm excited to enjoy that before my life is over in August.
That's good.
Yeah. What about you?
You know, we've got some travel on the books, getting to see some friends that are across the country. And yeah, just enjoying summer in the city. This is always one of my favorite times to be in the Twin Cities. So,
yeah.
Just looking forward to that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, Maddie, this has been a very fun season. And I know we're both excited for a little break, but thank you for joining me this season 3.
I wouldn't do it for anyone else.
And on that note, peace be with you.
And also with you.
Bye.